Saving money on your next project now at Menards. Menards is the leading supplier of quality roof and floor trusses. Choose from our large selection of residential and post-frame trusses or design custom trusses specifically for your project. Get started on your building project today, in-store or on Menards.com. Plus, view our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. All right, let's get this show on the road then.
Want to go for a little ride?
Huh?
What's that? You're going to have to speak up louder than that. Oh, you want to go far? You want to go into outer space? You go flying through that air, screaming your head off with pure ecstasy as you explode into the cosmos.
Do the damn thing.
Okay, let's do it. Let's go for a ride.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 624 for the week of July 20th, 2026. I am Golf Pun Beverage David T. Cole, and I'm here with Baby Ruth Trivia Sarah D. Bunting.
She wasn't even a baby.
Parking Lot Pundit Tara Ariano.
I see y'all, I know all.
And guy sitting alone in a Buffalo Wild Wings asking the bartender to change the TV to a different game, Will Leach.
Seriously, I could watch the game at home. I came here to watch that game. I have been that guy so many times.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another week of Extra Hot Great. We are so glad that you are here. Before we get into this week's topic with this week's guest, a couple of updates from the commercial pitchman draft episode. That was Extra Hot Great 622. We threw everybody's draft boards up for a vote. Last time I checked the poll, I was leading by a few votes, followed by Dave and then Tara. These were not margins that permitted for any smugness, but my slate still did win. If you are a recent arrival to the listenership, welcome, and you should check out both of our commercial pitchman draft episodes. They were a lot of fun and overall pretty close. Well done. I also received a prize for winning the non-regulation game time in episode 622, a Blanche Devereaux tea with Better Late Than Pregnant on it. It is extremely bright red. I've already gotten many compliments on it, including from space, because you can see it from there. It is really, really red. It is perfect, and I thank you, Tara.
Well, I mean, you should thank Rue McClanahan, because the reason you got it is because she did a Tidy Bowl commercial sometime in the 80s or 90s.
Thank God. Thank God for her and her lack of rings.
We need to welcome our guest. He is a sports writer, novelist, and podcaster you have heard with us many times before. It's Will Leach.
Welcome back, Will.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm so glad. Unlike every other day for the last month I have of my life, it's very exciting that this podcast has absolutely nothing to do with soccer. And I do like soccer, but I am ready to take a break. I'm ready to take a break. It's the World Cup. It's been my life.
Golf is like small soccer with sticks.
It's definitely, I will say that the Hawk is indicative of this, whatever your thoughts about it. It definitely gets across how much worse golf fashion is than soccer fashion, to say the very, very least.
We aren't talking about soccer, but we are talking about sports today way more than we normally do, because our lead topic is the Hawk. Thank you.
All right, I gotta stop that now.
Thank you. Also,
are you?
Thank you for doing it. Thank you for stopping. Question mark. Lonnie Hawkins, Will Ferrell, was a hard-partying golf legend in his day, but that day is so long over that he's being eclipsed by his son Lance, Jimmy Tatro, an abstemious vegetarian with a team of experts helping him maximize his physical gains. Now that Lonnie owes his not-quite-ex-wife Stacy, Molly Shannon, $500,000, he's trying to get back on the pro tour, but can he do it without his most devoted supporter and at a time when fans seem ready to bestow his nickname, The Hawk, on Lance instead? The show was co-created by Ferrell, Chris Henshey, and Harper Steele. All 10 episodes of the first season dropped on Netflix July 16th. I guess it's possible we might talk about events from any of them. Let's do the Chen check-in. Will, should our listeners watch The Hawk?
No.
Sarah?
No, no thanks.
Dave?
Nope.
Four for four. No for me as well. Let's get into why. golf, I think, is generally agreed to be very boring to watch. Will, given your many intersecting areas of expertise, how do you account for the fact that there are currently not one but two golf sitcoms on streaming TV?
Yeah, Defense Sports.
Each with a different Wilson brother, even.
Yeah, what the hell?
Say what you will about the economic environment of streaming services, but generally speaking, executives play a lot of golf. They play a lot of golf, okay. And they find this a lot more interesting. I live in Athens, Georgia, and I do not play golf. I am very much of the George Carlin golf is a waste of land sort of viewpoint. Mm-hmm. So I don't. Not only do I not like golf, I actively reject it to the point that I'll tell people, "Oh, I don't play golf," but I live in a place that people are so obsessed with golf. They'd be like, "Oh, so you like forgot your clubs?" I'm like, "No, I don't like the sport. The sport is stupid." So certainly, but I do think that's it, right? You know, I think people that green light projects like this are really into golf, and they think it's a lot more interesting, and certainly sometimes a lot more funny than I think the rest of us.
I buy that.
Yeah. It's clear pretty on that a significant part of the story is going to be about Lonnie and Lance's different approaches to their job. I assume this is a real thing sports fans have opinions about, so I'm going to ask the sports fans here how compelling they feel that is for a scripted show. Sarah, why don't you start us off?
I think that this is in every scripted sports show, like you see it in Running Point, you see it in, it was in Stick, another one that I was like, good for you. I'm not watching any more of this. Mm-hmm. And there is that tension in like unscripted coverage of sport and narratives around sport that it's like old school, you know, old ball players never die ways of doing things and like go with your gut versus, you know, just like sabermetricizing everything. You know, it's Rocky IV. Rocky versus Drago and all of the little sticky things that he has all over him and his, you know, Russian milkshakes and stuff like that.
Oh, sure. Sticky things.
Steroids. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I think you have to have that in any story that's a sports story, but also a generational sports story. But the problem with the way the Hawk does it is the problem with the Hawk in general, which is that it's not quite a full Will Ferrell property. Like if Ethan Hawke or Vince Vaughn had been cast as the Hawk Senior, it could have been a little bit more of a, still satirical, but just a little bit more of a straight ahead, humorous, but also serious look at what this family is and mm-hmm. is like. Then I would have been interested, but it was like it almost couldn't commit to either having a more sort of like loosey-goosey, this guy is a Hyacin protagonist, but we love him anyway, or full Will Ferrell, surreal, he's wearing a thong over plaid golf pants, whatever. Mm-hmm. The latter is not appealing to me, and the former, it was like they thought they didn't know how to do that. And when you kill off my favorite actor in the whole thing in the first 5 minutes, why is any of this happening?
Not only do you kill off Keith David in the first 5 minutes, he has more scenes subsequent to that as a corpse as he did before he died.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. It goes on for a while. They really just have him around the set. Uh-huh. He's getting paid probably tens of thousands of dollars an hour to lie down in a coffin.
Mm-hmm. Will, you were nodding along with Sarah's answer. It seems like you agree.
Yeah, well, also, I mean, particularly golf is a sport that, you know, like you couldn't have like a retired basketball player trying to play against his son or her daughter because they're old. They would pull a hamstring the minute they do anything. Golf mm-hmm. is a sport that you can convince yourself that the old school ways are the way to do it, and you can play longer. I mean, honestly, the one actual good golf movie, I would say, is Tin Cup, which is basically about this, right? Mm-hmm. The idea mm-hmm. that Kevin Costner is getting older, but he can still play his old way with all these young, and particularly a lot of that, too, is for people that are into golf, they actually really do hate, this is why the Jimmy Tatro character is the way he is, they actually hate that golf has become this like biometric sort of like super intense, super fitness sort of thing. They actually hate that. And so that gives them, much like as Sarah was saying with the Moneyball sabermetrics thing, you need to get all this fancy equipment and none of that. And again, that is the thing that I find most weird about The Hawk is it has the basic cliche sports stuff that all of these things have, but it has Will Ferrell doing an increasingly kind of desperate Will Ferrell thing. This actually reminded me, it's funny because Harper Steele is like one of the top writers on this. This reminded me of Will and Harper, the documentary, of course, that's on Netflix, mm-hmm. and the worst parts of that, all of which involve Will Ferrell. All of which mm-hmm. involve like Will Ferrell constantly, not only like being unable to turn it off, but like not listening to anything that Harper Steele has to say in that uh-huh. movie. And the minute Harper Steele's about to like, has such main character energy in that. It's like, no, you are here. Like I understand your why this has gotten made, but why are you putting on the Sherlock Holmes hat exactly in this restaurant? Like, what are you doing? And that feels, it was funny. I actually found myself watching this, remembering when Will Ferrell used to mock Robert Goulet on Saturday Night Live, and these old school entertainers and these old people, like, they don't understand what the young, cool, hip comedy people are. And I found myself watching and being like, God, he not only like Will Ferrell, obviously, however he looks, but like that his comedy is so stuck in things from like 20 years ago mm-hmm. that was funny then, but has not evolved in any sort of yep. interesting way. Yep. The thong thing being the perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. And so I think what's so frustrating about this is that like, there may be a show in there, but Will Ferrell, it just won't allow it to be one. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the show just stops. And listen, there's funny people. I think Jimmy Thatcher, I watched him in that Vince Vaughn Hulu movie, Mike and Mike. Mm-hmm. And I think he's actually very funny in that movie because mm-hmm. they wanted more of him. Here he has nothing to do. Molly Shannon is over the top. Everybody is just so following that we're in a Will Ferrell comedy and going so big. Mm-hmm. And what's funny is the best Will Ferrell comedies, people obviously went big, but they were still playing like characters. They had like a thing that they did. Mm-hmm. Here it's a frantic antic. We're improvising and it all just kind of falls apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a desperate Diet Coke version of Talladega Nights.
Well, yeah. And I mean, drop the balloons because I'm about to say this for the 1 millionth time on the podcast. This is a movie. Like, this is watching that cold open with the crazy driving sequence. It was like, this would have been in the 80s or 90s. This would have been a Paramount movie produced by Lorne Michaels. Mm-hmm. It would have been 87 minutes long where, like, you have a crazy outsized character. He has a very specific goal he's trying to achieve. And then it would be over. You could leave the characters.
It also feels like it might have been the original script for Happy Gilmore 2, where Happy Gilmore has a son and that's it. And they couldn't sell it. So it became this series. And it just sort of like everything else you've seen in a comedy golf movie before. And then there's just like this Will Ferrellness attached to it. And it's just like, it's very unsatisfying because of that, I think. Yep.
Will's point about him being stuck and not listening to anyone. Like, I guess there's nobody close to him that is willing to say, like, you are now the old man at your own Night at the Roxbury Club and you have to stop. Like, I don't know if anyone witnessed the Hawk team's commentary before the Home Run Derby, but like, they're covering the introductions of the Home Run Derby hitters, and then one of the guys in the first round, who is a Japanese-born player, strides to the plate, and they're like, he walks like a tiger, and it's like, oh my God, who fell asleep on the hook? Like, when are we? What are you doing? This is not funny. He needs to have that, like, John Ritter turn of the millennium serious turn where mm-hmm. he gets cast in something that's entirely else and has to relearn how to be a part of the culture, because this is not it. And it's been stuck here for like 20 years, I feel like when he tried to play in every spring training game that time, it was like, who asked for this?
Right.
Not baseball.
Well, in terms of having no one in his life to say no, I mean, I think we are starting to really see the downstream effects of the Will Ferrell, Adam McKay professional breakup, because I think each of them is worse without the other. Mm-hmm. Like, there was some kind of alchemy that the two of them had together, and now we're starting to really see, like, oh, they need to, like, get back together for real, because this is mm-hmm. not it.
And I would say also, I was trying to think of, like, the last time I liked Will Ferrell in something. I think he's not horrible in that, that was a weird thing to say this, the Ryan Reynolds movie. The Ryan Reynolds Christmas movie is not terrible, and Will Ferrell has, because he has to dial it down in that spirited. But I actually think the only time I've actually really found him actively funny was actually in the Last Week Tonight thing when they were talking about, like, when he did that short bit, that musical bit where about, like, what the new God Bless the USA song would be, where basically what they would play for new immigrants. And he had that song and it had truck nuts and cyber trucks. It was really funny because someone else wrote it. It's yeah. like their bits and it's their thing and it's their sensibility. And Will Ferrell comes in and performs it. Mm-hmm. That's like and I think that's the key, is like he can't be in charge anyway. And Adam McKay, I mean, he's long gone at this point, that like those, like they're so gone that you actually have to have five people have their own specific sensibility and say, you do this, otherwise knock it off. And there's nobody really around him to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Can I play us off with the one thing I found very funny watching the show? It made me laugh because I'm three.
God, I really thought my game would come back. I thought I was on a run, but it was just a hot streak.
What's the difference?
Well, a hot streak is good, especially if you're going into a major, but a run, that feeling's like nothing else. Take a hot streak. You know when you're holding your piss all day long and you really gotta go and you find a toilet and that urination is the greatest feeling of all time?
Mm-hmm, sure.
But a run is more like a dump. Not just any old dump, like a steak and potatoes dump.
Okay.
The type of dump you tell your friends about. The type you post on the internet. The type that you still feel long after you've left the bathroom. You know that feeling?
I love that.
Newfangled stories on my electric story box.
Around the dial. Poop. First stop, Tara.
Yes, I watched The Five-Star Weekend. This is the new limited series adapted from an Ellen Hildebrandt novel. We previously talked about The Perfect Couple on the main show. From what I understand, that source material was off-model for that author, other than taking place on Nantucket. Normally, her books are about relationships, not crimes, like this one is. Jennifer Garner plays Hollis, the world's oldest Hollis, a food influencer whose husband is killed in a car crash in the opening moments of the premiere. And the story then jumps 6 months ahead. Hollis is promoting her first cookbook on the Today Show. Improbably, the dish she is making is a roasted onion dip to set up Jenna Bush Hager as herself, asking how Hollis can cut onions without crying, so that Hollis can say her husband just died so she can't do anything without crying and starting to cry and creating a viral moment. After the segment, Hollis's agent, played by Vella Lovell, says that when her own mother was going through something, she had a girls' weekend with a friend from each phase of her life. And since Hollis has a gigantic house on Nantucket, this is a great idea for her. She invites her childhood friend Tatum, Chloe Sevigny, her college friend Drew-Ann, Regina Hall, her mom friend Brooke, Darcy Carden, and her internet friend Gigi, Gemma Chan. If her agent was hoping that suggesting the gathering would get her invited, too bad for her, she is not. The friends who already knew each other have their own connections and resentments among themselves, like Tatum never getting over something shitty she overheard Drew-Ann saying about her at Hollis's wedding decades ago, which, by the way, real. But they all try to just be there for whatever Hollis needs, and even though each of them happens to be at her own crisis point this particular weekend, that includes Hollis's college freshman daughter, Caroline, who shows up to surprise Hollis, and also Hollis's high school love interest, Jack, played by Timothy Olyphant. The show never quite transcends the Beach Read material it's based on. I assume I haven't read it. Everyone gets a maximum of two characteristics to portray. This includes Hollis, who maps out the weekend's entire itinerary on her invitation, down to the pajama dance party that Catherine mocked in our summer TV preview, so that when someone wants to leave early, someone else can gasp, "You're leaving before the make your own pizza party?" Seemingly sincerely. Jennifer Garner's perfectly cast as Hollis, whose domestic control freak ways make her kind of annoying. Sorry. Also, one of the issues that other people have with her is that she's maybe addicted to positive feedback from her followers, which I don't think is the biggest problem influencers have typically, but one gets absolutely no sense that even a few of Hollis's fans are crazy. Even after a real-life frenemy of Hollis's posts the weekend itinerary publicly, only a few of the fans show up at a bar where Hollis is going and they don't, like, you know, try to find her house or be weird in other ways. Chloe Sevigny is also perfectly cast as a friend who is kind of a bitch, sorry again, and brings the edge and acid this show could have used more of to keep it from becoming just a straight Nantucket luxury porn. I do have to highlight the one moment that made me laugh. Caroline gets arrested fooling around in the historic lighthouse, where else, with a guy who's sort of and sort of not in a relationship with someone else. and gets his sort of girlfriend to come and bail him out. And we get this. Let's hear the clip.
Get up. Let's go. Not you. You're going to rot in jail.
Whoa, hold on a minute.
That's no not one fair. Rots in
That's
it's
not
a community
fair.
Meeting room.
It's a community meeting room. Really made me laugh because it is. So I'm always saying I want more shows like this and fewer shows about murder mysteries. I wanted to like this, but it seems to be based on the kind of low middle brow chiclet I don't like. And the performances could not quite put it over for me. That said, it is 8 episodes and I watched them all. So I'm part of the problem.
Do you think it would be better if it had more poo jokes?
If it had any poo jokes, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
There are, of course, menopause jokes because... Menopause got a new agent about 3 years ago.
Good one. A very good one. A very, very good agent.
For my plug, speaking of menopause, I'm going to recommend that everyone join the Listen to Sassy Club. Dave and I and our friend Pam, who you've heard on this podcast before, are going through every issue of Sassy Magazine, all 80, in excruciating detail. ListenToSassy.com/club is where you go to get all the perks, which include full PDF scans of every single issue in full, every page, every ad. Sarah D. Bunting is going to be on in a couple of weeks because we have finally arrived at the Jason Priestley 2 different covers issue. So we're here.
Wait, make Will guess what the difference is between the covers.
Okay.
It's 2 states of Jason Priestley.
It's possible Will might remember because, perhaps. You know, he's sassy age.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so two different eras of Jason Priestley?
It's the variant cover.
2 available covers of the same issue.
Oh, okay. One is there a dangerous Jason Priestley cover?
Close.
Yeah, you're pretty close. I'll give him partial credit on that. It's wet and dry.
Yeah,
wet and dry.
Wet.
Oh, he's dangerous wet.
Dry.
Oh, look at that little scamp.
Yeah.
Emphasis on little.
I'm more dangerous dry myself.
All right, Will. Dangerously dry Will. What do you got for it?
So I am, because my children, my oldest son's about to turn 15 and my youngest just turned 12. And so I've always been lame, but boy, are they very aware of just how lame I am and becoming and have always been. So I'm trying to find reasons to keep them around me. Without much success. But we've started watching Breaking Bad. We've just started doing a full Breaking Bad rewatch right from the beginning. I don't think I've watched actually Breaking Bad. Really, I don't think I've ever rewatched it since it was on. Obviously, I watched it into Better Call Saul. I am one of those people that thinks Better Call Saul is better, just so you know. So keep that in mind as well. Watching Breaking Bad with a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old, I mean, I think I'm right about Better Call Saul being better. 2, I am now the age of Walter White. The show famously starts on his 50th birthday. I'm currently 50 years old. I have like Walter Jr., I have an older son that's that age. They think that Walt is 94 years old. That Walt Jr. is the coolest freaking guy. They cannot get over how cool they think Walt
Flynn.
Jr. And I know
justice for Flynn.
And I actually like. There are some people that really didn't like Walt Jr. I liked Walt Jr. I never had any issues with Walt Jr. I enjoyed Walt Jr. But I definitely thought that, like, wow, what? Some people even thought he was quite hot, as a matter of fact. But I never really thought of him as like this, like. Well, I guess is wet Jason Priestley. What I guess being way to think about him, mm-hmm. The way that my kids seem to think of him, they think he's remarkable. But we are still only like 3 episodes into season 2, and this was my reminder. Right, nobody else shows up till season 3. I totally forgot. There's no Gus. There's no Saul. There's no Mike. There's no Mike Urbentraut until season 3. I'd forgotten just how long we go until we actually get really the signature characters of the show. And for what it's worth, there is an actual moment because my kids are not. I would not classify them as television critics or even skeptics. They are. We look at the flashy colors, and that's fine. They're teenagers. I get it. But it was a very funny moment. I've forgotten when Jesse goes to get the apartment, when he's trying to get clean, trying to get going, and he goes in to sign the lease. And of course, Kristen Ritter is his landlord, conveniently. And literally, the first thing my son says is like, "Wait, that's his landlord? Is that what landlords look like?" Yes, that is where, that is how your mother and I met. Was, she was my hot landlord. We were both recovering from our addictions, and conveniently we came together at just the right time to cause a tragic plane crash. And that's how you got here. So that is my, the opening watches of my breaking. I keep wanting to be like, seriously, all the really good characters aren't coming in until next year, but hang in there.
How do your kids respond to all the gruesome events that happened, like Tub Guy in the first couple episodes, stuff like that? How are they dealing with that?
Tub Guy.
Here's the thing that I've noticed about myself among other parents, because other parents, like, I think my kids see Obsession, and I didn't even think twice about it. I wasn't too worried about it because they watch horror movies. They're not really scared about that stuff. I generally open that stuff. And the number of other parents who, by the way, literally just lock their kids in the room and let them scroll freaking dumbass TikTok and Instagram reels all day are very worried about potentially seeing a boob.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Look, George Carlin's back.
Exactly. So, you know, how old am I compared to when George Carlin did his HBO specials? I need to look that up too now, apparently. Thanks, Dave.
Don't do it.
So they can handle the violence.
That wasn't a criticism, by the way. I was just curious what they thought of it.
No, it's a violence they see in their home, frankly, on a regular basis.
I mean, I remember when I was young, the first horror movie I saw was the original Day of the Dead, and I fucking loved it. And it, you know, I didn't turn into a Fangoria freak or anything.
Yeah,
I was
I was a Poltergeist guy ripping his face off in Poltergeist and never quite being the same after that. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Give us your plugs. Plug us up.
Yeah, so the paperback version of my novel, Lloyd McNeil's Last Ride, just came out. Lionsgate is still, I can give an update on that. They are still adapting it. They're writing the screenplay. It's Scott Z. Burns is now writing the screenplay because Department Q got picked up. So Scott Frank is no longer doing it, but Scott Z. Burns is writing it. So so they've updated me on that. Unlike Scott Frank, he has not reached out to me for any of my thoughts. So I assume it's going better.
And it's now a space odyssey. Yeah, it's now
it's great. It's Lloyd McNeil's second or third ride, and there's plenty more coming. You know, you got to make sure it continues to stream on for a long time. And I've been covering the World Cup. You can see all my work that I've been doing about the World Cup and everything else at New York Magazine and the Washington Post. They let me keep writing things.
All right, check your show notes. Sarah D. Bunting, what do you got for us?
Okay, notwithstanding that I still keep calling high potential high maintenance and why they didn't just name it Morgan Guillory, I'm not a crackpot. This is too confusing. I had fallen off the show midway through season two. In case you don't recall, this is the LAPD Lady Sherlock procedural based on a French original starring Caitlin Olsen. We talked about it in episode 528, if you want to scroll back to that. I was finding myself really frustrated by the show overreaching on its cases of the week. The premise of the show and what makes it compelling is Morgan and her process, that Sherlocky way that she draws connections. Early second season episodes were getting increasingly baroque with the crimes themselves when it wasn't really necessary, and also getting a little too close for my comfort to a will-they-won't-they vibe with Morgan and Daniel Sunjata's Karadek. Like, this is not why people watch this show. They watch it for Morgan, for the way her too-rosy blended family does its thing, the embrace of neuro-D superpowers, especially in kids, which is legit cool, and her endless collection of boots, let's be real. But I came back to it recently to have something to knit in front of. At my dad's house, this is definitely a show that not everyone is going to love it, maybe, in a given diverse room full of people, but anyone will like it or find something to look at in it. And I think the trick to watching the show after the newness of it wore off is to just take it on blue sky terms and hope it learns to do the same. High potential maybe looked like something more than it is because it does some things blue sky shows like White Collar traditionally didn't. But in the end, it's just gender swapped SoCal monk with a series of fierce manis, and that is a cromulent brief. Not everything has to be innovating on narrative to be a pleasant sit. So for my plug, speaking of sits and not pleasantness, if you like to read true crime books and do not enjoy spending a lot of money to do so, A, I have a secondhand true crime bookshop called Exhibit B, And B, I've got a paperback BOGO sale on until August 8th. Buy one paperback, get the next for free. The cart, as David T. Cole can attest, does the arithmetic. I capped it at 5 per session, but there's no other exclusions here. So if you want to bank some plane ride reading for cheap, now is your chance. ExhibitBBooks.com. Link in the show notes.
True crime. All right, here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday. We've got Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 4. We've already watched the first handful of episodes. There's some really good stuff in there. Stay tuned for our opinions on that. And then come back here next week, EHG Prime. A real Morning Sam, Morning Ralph moment as we welcome back Tim Grierson to talk about Furious.
Sure do.
Boo. Saving money on your next project now at Menards. Menards is the leading supplier of quality roof and floor trusses. Choose from our large selection of residential and post-frame trusses or design custom trusses specifically for your project. Get started on your building project today, in-store or on Menards.com. Plus, view our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon, presenting this week, Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes, it's me. For those of you perhaps not as familiar with turn of the millennium TV, Sports Night was the two-season wonder that ABC didn't quite know what to do with or give enough chances to, or the right chances to. That's Aaron Sorkin's sitcom, set at a SportsCenter-esque nightly update show and starring kind of everyone. But for our purposes, Josh Charles and Peter Krause as co-anchors Dan and Casey, Felicity Huffman as executive producer Dana, Sabrina Lloyd as associate producer Natalie, and Josh Molina as her boyfriend and fellow associate producer Jeremy, and of course the great Robert Guillaume as, not Benson, but managing editor Isaac Jaffe. Also important to this episode, namely Season 1, Episode 16, Sally, which aired in February of 1999, are the titular Sally, who is the executive producer of the network's West Coast update show, played by Brenda Strong, and Ted the show killer McGinley as newsman and Dana love interest Gordon. Why does this episode belong in the Extra Hot Great canon? I will let Jeremy, with an assist from Jeff Mooring's Dave and Kayla Blake's Kim, set the scene for us in clip one.
Man, this is about as bored as I have ever been in my life.
Jeremy, good Jeremy, what ho?
What ho?
What news, Jeremy?
Why is she speaking like this?
She thinks she's Sacco and Vanzetti.
Solanio and Solario.
The Little Winds.
The Venticelli.
Yes.
All right. Well, Dana's having second thoughts about Gordon. Dana thinks it's because Gordon stood her up last night under suspicious circumstances, but Natalie thinks it's because Dana really likes Casey. Casey's a little out of sorts because sometime last week, he spent the night with someone. Casey thinks it's because it was too soon after his marriage broke up, but Dan thinks it's because Casey's in love with Dana. That's pretty much it.
Would it be wrong for you guys just to make up a news story?
It would be fundamentally wrong.
Can any of you tell me anything about the host wafer?
I'll get to the host wafer bit in a second, but basically the premise of this episode is that it is a very slow sports news day. So Kim has just been boring the rest of the bullpen with Shakespeare trivia. At least it wasn't Gilbert and Sullivan for once. And the credits cast characters have way too much time to think about their romantic entanglements or their doubts about Same or their co-anchor's romantic entanglements and his caginess about Same. And this is the first reason I think Sally is canon worthy. The episode setup lets Aaron Sorkin's almost ticky, jazzy dialogue sing. That old saw about one's greatest strength also being one's greatest weakness is never more evident than in a Sorkin script, and sometimes an episode's premise can really work against his distinctive writing, making it more obvious, less believable, that everyone in a given workplace or sector of society would speak in exactly the same hyper-literate, invasive species leitmotif manner. This script, co-written by Sorkin and Rachel Sweet, a singer-turned-showrunner who did some sitcom teleplays at this time and played George's cousin Shelley in the contest episode of Seinfeld, understands the way a slow day at work or during an exam's reading period or whatever else is an absolute petri dish for obsessing and drama. And on that tip, Jeremy asked about the host wafer because he's been invited to Natalie's family's home for Easter. His utterly Sorkin-characterian response is to immerse himself in the New King James Bible, to interrogate it while also trying to perfect an eggnog recipe. It is not credible that an adult resident of Earth would conflate Christian holiday traditions in this way, but to the extent that anyone is able to sell the humor here, Melina finds a way, clip two.
This is one of those moments I'm compelled to tell you how wonderful you are. Every once in a while, I'm reminded how lucky I am to be dating a solid, mature man. Jeremy, swallow the eggnog.
I just can't.
Who amongst us, my brother in Christ, is that disgusting? Reason number two. Felicity Huffman's Dana is historically a somewhat trying character to watch. But in the first season, it was because, or at least more often because, her high-strung interpersonal clumsiness coexisted with her reliable and competent professionalism in a way that was relatable, exhausting, but in the pre-Dana's dating plan era, at least recognizable. And Huffman knew exactly how to play it, clip three.
Dana, Natalie. This is you and me talking, Dana. I'm not other people. This is our little coven of women.
The coven is a group of witches.
I thought a coven was just a group.
It's a group of witches.
All right, then this is our little something else.
And also because a coven is more than two.
A coven is more than two?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Are you absolutely sure?
Yes.
Then thank you, William Sapphire.
I'm just saying, if you're going to misuse a word, you should do it properly.
You don't like Gordon.
That's not true.
It is true, and you happen to be the only one who doesn't know it.
I like Gordon a lot. I love Gordon. I'm telling
you. And I'm telling you that when you use that word in a romantic context, you have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Well, no.
Natalie's frustration with Dana's deep denial is also relatable, but Dana's physical and tonal recoil when Natalie hits her with the Sorkin version of "You're just a virgin who can't drive" from Clueless is exactly right. Sorkin's writing does his women dirty 90-odd percent of the time, so it's nice when that's not the case, and with the actors delivering it do so much to course correct for it. Reason 2B, sports night can be a real shit about Sally. Dana calls her Sally the Willing later in the episode. That's just one instance. This story arc consistently positions Sally as some sort of Homeric supernatural antagonist whose sole earthly purpose is to test our heroes with her sluttiness, when in fact, she's just a badass giraffe who likes to fuck. Justice for Sally. That's how Brenda Strong plays her, to her credit, and at least this exchange gives the character some justice. Clip four.
Look at that. Hey, Sally. Sally had the score.
What's going on?
Virtually nothing. Sally was right there with the score.
You got a problem with me today, Dan?
You're 19 feet tall. Why are you wearing heels?
Are you feeling diminutive?
No, but now I have to look up that word.
But the third reason is, of course, the payoff. After the careful setup involving recursive conversations between Dan and Casey about Casey's favorite shirt, whether he has a favorite shirt, whether he lost the shirt or just doesn't have possession of the shirt currently, about which lady's apartment it got left in, what the timeline of the laundry therein might have been, whether Casey's going to crack and tell Danny who he had sex with, and after a painstaking picking of a scab by Dana about the fact that Gordon stood her up the night before, should she call him on it? Is Gordon lying about working late? Does she want to know if he's lying about working late? The laying of this groundwork might feel laborious, not least to the characters. Clip five.
I'm feeling kind of conflicted about it. For many reasons, I suppose, not the least of which is I obviously have to confront some unresolved feelings for Dana. Plus, I really miss my shirt.
Keep talking. I'm just going to start drinking now.
But it's all in the service of a glorious prestige. It becomes clear, right after Sally does her looming bit with Dan, that despite his denials, Casey did in fact leave his shirt at Sally's place. And after Dana breaks off canoodling with Gordon to get set up for that night's broadcast, it becomes clear also what became of the shirt in one of the great sitcom mic drops. Lip six.
Don't take my friendship with Dana for granted.
What do you mean?
I know you think I'm in love with her. I know she thinks I'm in love with her. And that's all fine, so long as it's fun and games. But I want you to know Dana's important to me. I've known her a long time, and I like her a lot. And there are certain lengths I'd go to avoid seeing her get hurt in any way.
What's on your mind, Casey?
You're wearing my shirt, Gordon.
I was wondering why I felt so tight.
Yeah.
In addition to being a well-constructed and earned payoff, it's well and appropriately played by the actors, particularly by Krause, who often struggled to get all the Sorkinian rat-a-tat out, never mind act it at the same time. McGinley's choices here, which are basically holding very still as if during a bear attack, forced evenness of tone, are also smart and not necessarily the expected ones. This is not a flawless episode of what certainly was not a flawless show, but it's a fantastic showcase for what made Sports Night compelling and watchable at its best. Expertly built, expert execution by the actors, and I think it belongs in this podcast's Cooperstown, so I hope it's a good fit for the extra hot great canon.
Thank you, Sarah. Will, you selected this. Please start off our discussion.
Yes, I wanted to, being the sports person coming on here, I feel like I wanted to choose Sports Night. I watched Sports Night, eventually not when it was live. I would have loved it to watch it when it was live because I would have known at one point they are reading the Sporting News, which is a magazine I worked at when this show aired. So I would have been super, super excited to see the Sporting News this morning. Back the team reports, if those, if anyone remembers back at the time this was Sporting News, it was known for, was the team reports. But it was my job to put them online because that's why I was the online guy. I was 22.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's what, as someone that like loves, that enjoyed the show and particularly loves this era of the Big Show, the SportsCenter show that of course Sorkin was using from Dan Patrick before he became an Adam Sandler kind of like hanger-on and Keith Olbermann before he went truly batshit insane, or at least we all knew that he was truly batshit insane. I think he probably always was. I always loved when I went back and watched the show later. I actually always connected to their friendship because it felt like what I like to pretend those two were like. And I think there's so much 90s nostalgia these days and so much kind of like if like the rock stars are smoking again, like all the 90s nostalgias are coming back. I found myself very nostalgic for like, right, this was when SportsCenter was really smart and clever, and someone like Aaron Sorkin would do a whole show inspired by, well, I guess the first of his two shows inspired by Keith Olbermann's television presence.
Right.
I suppose.
Yeah. Ouch, also.
Yes. Yes. This one is better than that one, for what it's worth. But this that mic drop moment is, like, it's the moment of this episode, right? It's the one that not only, like, it's a record scratch moment, but you also immediately, like, when I watched it, I was like, ooh, I'm going to watch that again. Like, it's a classic, like, watch that again moment in an episode. And you're right. I think the best thing you get across here, Sarah, is the idea that, like, it's very, you know, Sorkin, not always known for his subtlety as a writer, I would say. But it's
what do you mean?
I know. Sorry. I should have asked you to sit down before I said that. I apologize. But certainly, that is it's just sort of writing technique. It's clever, right? Because the shirt just seems like a punchline. It just seems like a silly thing, and then it pops up at the exact right time. Now, listen, it has been a long time. It's been since I had any salad days where I would randomly stay over at someone's home and then be like, well, time to go to work to my television job. I think I'll just grab whatever shirt's nearby. And so I don't know if I ever did that. It doesn't seem like something I would do, but hey, I am not Ted McGinley, but it's worth it because the payoff is so good. And I actually kind of love, Sarah, that you pointed out, I really love the way Ted McGinley plays that, right? Where there's a certain kind of notion of, oh, I'm fucked, but all right, man to man, I'm fucked. You know I'm fucked. What next? And I kind of like the way
Let's just see how this plays.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's kind of and you're right, it's kind of unexpected. It's a little bit sharper than you might think that would be, particularly with like a big moment like that. Like in a worse show, he's like, and like runs out of the room or something, right? Mm-hmm. And that's like a very nice little moment. So it reminded me, like, I don't remember a lot of episodes of the show. I remember certain moments. I remember certain parts. I also love that this is the era of the show where they were just about finally tuned out the laugh track
was almost completely gone. And
yeah, I meant to mention that there are these weird, like, vestigial tails of them on certain scenes that I just tuned them out of the clips I pulled because it's like, oh my God, stop.
It is funny because it almost feels, it feels like it does. The vestigial is great. It's like almost like an echo. Like, this has been recorded on VCR so many times that you can barely just hear them anymore. But it really is just that, like, they were just, he wanted to get rid of them, and the network was trying anything at this point, and they were trying to turn it down. But it's just weird to be like, okay, either have a laugh track or don't have a laugh track. Because right now, it just seems like they're only occasionally lightly laughing at very small moments in this, and those are the only funny moments. But I did enjoy the show, and I do think, I can see why this would that particular segment would jump out from the show, because it really is like a very clever writing moment. I'll close with this. As a sports person, there are no slow days, no news days in sports.
Yeah, I will seriously.
Say there's a great joke, your old newsroom joke, about how political reporters on election night will all get together and they're like, oh, it's going to be a late night. We've got to get pizzas. We're all going to bond together. And the sports department are like, yeah, we do this literally every night. We do this every night. There's constantly, sports are the literal definition of news. Like, there are things that happen and you report on the things that happen. So there's not a lot of slow sports days. I need someone to say, it's the baseball all-star break where there are no games or something, but otherwise there's always sports. But the conceit of it is a good one. A little bit too much Shakespeare fancy. We're talking Shakespeare stuff in this, but generally speaking, as Sorkin stuff goes, you can see it's mostly the good stuff of Sorkin and less of the bad stuff of Sorkin.
We finally found the throughput between Sports Night and Star Trek Next Generation. It's too much Shakespeare.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go next. Watching this reminded me of when Sarah, you pitched the final Elizabeth Rome episode of Law and Order, where the discussion that we had afterwards was sort of like, this is the kind of episode where making a canon case or a Nonak case for it is kind of indistinguishable. And all of the points he made were so apologetic. It's like, I don't know how convinced Bunting is of what she's saying here, because it's like, Dana's annoying. Everyone talks the same. It's like everything you were saying. It's like if you're positive on Sorkin, those are all great. And if you're not, I mean, I laughed at the eggnog moment and that was kind of it. Like I also, knowing nothing about sports, was like, there's no slow news days. This is just Sorkin not doing his research like usual, where he just, you know, has to have a framework for whatever he's trying to do, whether it lines up with reality or not. You know, I take your point that, like, he writes Sally shitty and everyone around her shitty about her. And then Brenda Strong is just like, I'm going to come in and play this like the coolest person in the world, which is like a feather in her cap more so than the show's, in my opinion. But I also didn't like, I wasn't that convinced by the payoff either. Like, believing it sort of makes you have to picture Sally's apartment as like just piles of white men's dress shirts all over the place where people are just mixing them up. And like, again, maybe that's what Sorkin is trying to do with this character that he thinks is a tramp. I don't think this is a mistake that you make. And, you know, leaving without your shirt is almost like leaving without a shoe. I mean, even if you wear a t-shirt underneath, it's sort of a strange thing to have lost track of, even under the circumstances. So, this was a tough one for me. Dave?
Just some observations of mostly background stuff that I enjoyed. First of all, did enjoy them stretching the font for the show title on the title card. You can't stretch this font. Looks terrible. Don't do it. I thought Benson was the best part of this episode. I really like his character. Just is like, these people. It's the whole these people of it all that I really enjoyed.
Yeah. Just slunk down in his chair like, ugh.
There's a scene, I don't know if they're in the control room or just, you know, in the bullpen or whatever you call it. But there's all these monitors behind somebody, and the two sports thing they're showing on the monitor is one, billiards, like snooker, actually, it was snooker, and the other one was curling. So they're really, maybe it was a slow sports day, actually, if those are the two things that got on tap.
Right.
And then later on, somebody's monitor has the I love curling sticker on the side. So somebody in the prop department really is a curling fan, I think.
Sure.
I thought the swallow the eggnog was the funniest thing in this episode. It really just made me laugh out loud. That was definitely a tiny can of moment for me. I've never had eggnog because the name eggnog terrifies me as a child. It continues to terrify me. What would be a better name for eggnog? If you had to like rebrand eggnog into something that would make you want to actually consume it.
Oh, well, it's not the French translation, which is chicken milk.
Oh my God. They came up with something worse than eggnog. Well done, France.
Yeah, or like nutmeg cream punch. I don't, nothing you can call it that lets you know what it is in an honest and straightforward, non-actionable manner.
But there's something in the pumpkin spice latte universe of naming that I think you can work around.
Teach your bird better.
My favorite sighting of this episode is when Felicity Huffman is talking to her subordinate or whatever she was.
Natalie.
And, thank you. And she's talking about Gordon. She's sort of like going on and on, spiraling out, and she's fidgeting with a mouse pad, and it was a Gateway Computers Moo mouse pad. It was one of those with the cow patterns on it. I was like, oh, remember Gateway Computers back in the day?
Remember mouse pads?
Yeah. But otherwise, I sort of agree with Tara. This one didn't click for me. It was interesting to see sort of a earlier, slightly proto-Sorkin West Wing, not walk and talk, just talk and talk sort of dialogue, pitter-patter. It didn't feel quite right now having watched all of West Wing. It didn't seem quite as snappy. It didn't seem quite as rehearsed in the West Wing as it did here. There's something stagey about the way Molina is delivering all his Bible stuff here that I found a little like, oh, I'm watching a script. I'm not actually watching a moment. I enjoyed it. I just wasn't quite canon for me. All right, let's make this official. Will Leach, sports expert. I almost feel like you should count as two votes because you're a sports guy.
I personally think I should always count as two votes. So for what it's worth. But I'm going to go ahead and say yes, just because I enjoy this particular period.
It still won't get in.
I know. That's why I'm doing it. It doesn't count three? Who's up for counting three?
I was being generous because I knew the outcome. Tara?
Yes, Sarah knows I treasure her always, but this is a no for me.
Yeah, I'm indifferent to Sarah, but also no. So that means, unfortunately, that Sports Night, Season 1, Episode 16, Sally, it was a tie because of Will Leach's double points. But unfortunately, ties go to not canon here on EHD. So it's my sad duty to report you have not made the extra hot gray canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover who is our winner and who is our loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
I do. It is Paige Williams, a journalist at The New Yorker. She wrote a piece recently called The Call of the Wild about the backcountry rescue squad at Great Smoky Mountains National Park, which I read the way that she probably intended, walking on a treadmill, because I'm not going to this park ever. But it's going to be developed as a series for FX, which is very smart. This is another way to sort of slice the procedural apple. I don't know. That metaphor got away from me again. I'm not a park person. But this is a way to do a procedural without sort of ACAB casting a shadow over it. This is just straight up people getting hurt and other people finding them and helping them out. So I'm excited to see what they do with it. You might get a little preview of it, kind of, with the USA show and a pigeon coming soon.
About pigeons.
You wish.
All these shows have to have it. So I think there's going to be territorial turf wars between the rescue squad or the park rangers.
Oh, yeah, probably.
It's like the cops FBI dynamic.
Yes, well, because the squad are volunteers. So that'll be part of it, too.
Once again, if you're a cop and the FBI wants to take your case, I'd be like, great, less work for me.
Yeah, well, really.
Yes, we'll see how that all plays
out.
When you can't
solve it, you get blamed. Yep. Bye.
Sarah, who's our loser of the week?
It's Jim Parsons, who was, quote, miserable during his peak Big Bang Theory popularity and, quote, wouldn't do that again for any amount of money. Like, you're allowed to feel however you want, but
yes,
the show wrapped 7 years ago. You don't have to give the money back. You won 4 Emmys, and you don't get to say this shit out loud.
Yeah.
Smash cut to 2033's Big Bang reunion show.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. Again, drop another batch of balloons, because as we say for the million and oneth time, tell it to your group chat. Don't tell a reporter.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, if he really truly wouldn't do it for any amount of money, he actually should in fact give back all the money that he got from the show. Yeah, if he would not do it for any amount of money, then the money you have is invalid. You have not earned it. You have to give it back.
Yeah, well, I mean, that he got from doing the show and continues to get from it because it's on in syndication all the time still.
Yeah,
it's a uniquely strange way to frame it. Mm-hmm. Like, even like you can see him being like, you know what, I regret it. I didn't have a good time. I wouldn't do it over again. But for any amount of money is literally the reason that you did it and continue to do it.
Yeah, seriously. Yep. I remember seeing him in other stuff contemporaneously, like The Normal Heart.
Same.
And I remember thinking, like, he is being underserved by his current station in the culture, I think. But, like, that's what the fucking money's for.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, speaking about a uniquely strange way to frame it, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
Oh, yeah, it's
gotta be game time.
Welcome back to Game Time. This is the 7th of the current season. The scores are Tara in the lead with 3, Value Guest right behind with 2, Sarah right behind Value Guest with 1. Today we're playing Leave It to the Professionals from Seth, who earns himself an extra credit topic of his choosing, plus a free shirt or mug or whatever he wants from the EHG store. You can find that at throughmethods.com. Today's game tests your knowledge of our favorite thing, the Celebrity Rewatch Podcast. You'll get the title of such a podcast, and if you can tell me the name of the show that it is about, 2 points. If you guess incorrectly, I'll give you the names of the hosts of that show, and you can guess again for 1 point. Let's go to the steel meal situation, please.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah has 1. Value guests have Eric's meal, so 1. Mm-hmm. And that rolls over in the next episode,
so
and
use it.
I have 6.
All right. All right, let's throw it to Peggy C. He's going first.
We will start with Tara.
All right, we'll go Tara, Sarah, Will. We got 33 questions. We might have a Gross Worth Equalizer Challenge Zone there, depending on time. Are we ready to play Leave It to the Professionals?
Yes.
All right, let me just give you an example, just get your motor running.
Mm-hmm.
The West Wing Weekly. What's that about? What TV show is that one about?
The West Wing.
Yes, The West Wing is correct. All right, that is an example. Tara, are you ready for your actual first clue?
Yes.
The podcast is called Race Chaser. Race Chaser.
I believe that is about RuPaul's Drag Race.
You just got 2 points. Yes, hosted by William Belly and Alaska Thunderfark.
Uh-huh. Yeah, 2 queens that are banned from the show, but they're still making money off it, and I, for one, salute them.
Here comes the Seth twist. Now, Tara.
Yeah.
Is that podcast real, or does Seth make it up? If you answer correctly, you get to keep your points. If you answer incorrectly, you don't get to keep the points you just earned.
Oh, Jesus.
No. It's real.
It's real, yes. All right, so you just won yourself 2 points.
Great.
Sarah D. Bunting. Gangster Goddess Broadcast. Gangster Goddess Broad hyphen cast.
Gangster Goddess Broadcast.
Yes.
I don't know. The Sopranos.
You are correct. It was The Sopranos. Is that real or does Seth make it up?
I think Seth made it up.
Oh, you just forfeited your points. No points for you. That is real. That is with Drea DiMatteo and Chris Kushner. They are the hosts of that podcast.
That's a terrible name.
Yeah. Well, she's also got a lot of issues. Terrible. Yeah.
Will.
Yeah.
Yes. Your podcast is called The Truth Is In Here. The Truth Is In Here. What show does that reference?
I'm going to guess that's The X-Files.
That is The X-Files. Is The Truth Is In Here, hosted by Annabeth Gish and Dean Haglin, real? Or is it malarkey?
I think it's malarkey.
You're correct. It is malarkey.
Yes, oh, wow. Really?
For you.
That's funny.
Tara.
Yeah.
Hashtag Reaper Reviews is the name of this podcast. What show is it about?
I mean, Reaper feels like it's too easy. 6 feet under?
This podcast is hosted by Kim Coates and Theo Rossi.
Oh, Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy is good for 1 point. Is this podcast real?
Yes,
it is real. Yes. You get to keep your point. Back to Sarah. Your podcast is called The Delta Flyers. the Delta Flyers.
Delta Flyers. Designing women.
This is a packed house.
That was right.
Sounds chaotic. Garrett Wang, Robert Duncan McNeil, Terry Farrell, and Armin Shimerman.
What's the name again?
The Delta Flyers. Like the Philadelphia Flyers, but different.
Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, we'll give that to you. It's for Deep Space Nine and Star Trek Voyager. People from both those shows on one podcast. Too many people.
Crazy.
Four people is too many people for a podcast. I'm just going to... Oh, shit.
Fine, I'll leave.
Is it real or fake?
It's real.
It's real, yes. All right, back to Will. Fake doctors, real friends. Fake doctors, real friends.
Scrubs?
Scrubs is correct. Real?
Yes.
Of course, yes. Donald Faison, Zach Braff. Tara?
Yes.
In all caps, pants.
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 The Mr. Peanut Podcast.
Firefly.
Hosted by Catherine Monig and Alicia Haley.
That's about the L word.
That's good for a point if you can tell me if it's real or not and be correct.
That's probably real.
You get to keep your point. If you hear metal in the background, it's because Sandy is trying to catch a fly right next to the cage in front of the window. Back to Sarah. On board the Megazord. On board the Megazord.
Futurama?
Sorry.
Hosted by David Yost and Amy Jo Johnson.
Power Rangers?
Yeah, I'll give you that answer. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Thank you.
Is on board the Megazord real, or is it malarkey?
I hope it's malarkey.
You are correct. You get to keep
nice.
The point.
Nice!
Back to Will. The Night's Watch. The Night's Watch.
The Night's Watch. Game of Thrones?
Yes, Game of Thrones. But is it real? Hosted by Nikolai Coster, Waldo, Liam Cunningham, Gwendolyn Christie.
I'm guessing no, it's not real.
You're correct. You're correct.
Oh, good.
Yes, you get to keep your points. Nicely done. Tara. Oh,
yeah.
Victory, the podcast. What show is that about?
Survivor.
Hosted by Kevin Dillon and Kevin Connolly.
Entourage.
Is it real?
Probably.
Probably, yes. 1 point.
Wow, neither nice. Of them seems that busy.
Sarah, Questy Besties. Questy Besties.
Questy Besties. Oh, my God. This really could be anything. Stranger Things?
Oh, my God. There's five people. Ashley Burch, Jesse Ennis.
Sarah's never going to get this. She's never heard
Charlotte
of this show.
Charlotte McDowell. Okay. David Hornsby, Amani Hakim. That's your lineup.
John Cockdolston.
What's the show?
Okay. Is this Benson?
It's not. All right. So you zeroed out here. Anybody know what this is?
Yeah, it's Mythic Quest.
Yeah. Do you know if it's real?
Probably.
Probably is. Yeah, it is. Questy Besties. All right. This will take us to our first score break. It is for Will. Zach to the future. Zach to the future.
Saved by the Bell?
Correct.
Nice.
Is this podcast hosted by Mark Paul Gosselaar? Real or not?
I hope not. No.
It's real. No. And he's doing it by himself.
No.
Get in the truck.
I think that's why I said no. That feels sadder.
I mean, he has guests, I hope. I hope he has guests.
He should have at least gotten Breckenmeyer to do it with him. You know, even though he wasn't on the show. Who cares?
All right, let's get the scores. 12 questions are behind us.
Okay, Will is in the lead with 6. I have 5. Sarah has 2.
All right, Sarah, debunting, that means you are in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone.
Woo!
What do you feel about the classic purple TV box, Sarah debunting?
I like both those things. Let's do it.
All right.
Good luck.
6 questions. You get 3. We're going to give you 2 points. You sweep. We're going to double that to 4.
Hell yeah.
All right.
Classics. What honeymooners... What? There's so many questions about honeymooners in this. What honeymooners cast member once improvised the line, if you get any bigger gas bag, you'll just float away? Cast member.
Cast member. I don't remember anyone else except, let's go with Audrey Meadows. Why not?
Correct.
Woo! Oh,
sitcom.
Fuck.
What are the names of the orphans Philip Drummond adopts on Different Strokes?
Different Strokes. Arnold and Willis.
Yes.
Woo!
Drama! What Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. series was narrated by Marvin Miller? If Grandpa Bunsey was here, if you had your Grandpa Bunsey form, he would know the answer. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like this is up your alley just two generations ago.
Yeah. It's one of those shows that, like, fucking Mr. Brady was on, like, The Defendants. So let's try The Defendants.
The FBI.
Oh, yes.
Close. I got to say that as Hans Gruber. The FBI. All right. So you got three questions to get one more to get 2 points. What animated character's mother-in-law was Mrs. Flaghoople?
Slaghoople.
It says Flaghoople.
Okay, I'm pretty sure it's Slag.
Well, it's wrong, but Fred Flintstone.
Okay, great. For the correction, I'm going to give you a point, so you're back into the sweep.
Oh!
So you get these next two, you can still sweep it. That's on Trivial Pursuit.
Hell yeah.
Stars.
All right.
What All in the Family star went on strike for more dough? We gotta bring dough back. Dough's great.
Dough.
Or simoleons.
All right. All in the Family star. Which one?
I think it was, who's it? Struthers. Sally Struthers.
Carol Connor. All right.
Okay.
You got your points, but let's just do this one. Wild card. Who was named Mrs. America in 1954, the first year the pageant hit national TV?
Mrs. America?
Is it someone we've heard of?
Maybe. It sounds vaguely familiar, but it might just be the last name is familiar to me. I don't know. Let me give you the initials, see if you get it.
L-A-M-S-O-G.
L-A-M. Lamb.
Louisa A. Malcott.
Nope.
Sarah liked that. That's good enough for me.
Leanne Merriweather.
Nope, never heard of her.
All right.
Nope.
Oh, she's dead now.
So I got 2 points?
You got your 2 points. Woo! Nicely done. So you're up to four. Let's get back to it. Tara.
Yes.
Reminder, I'm reading you the name of a celebrity rewatch podcast. Mm-hmm. You got to tell me the show it's about.
Yep.
I Am All In.
Gilmore Girls.
Gilmore Girls is the show hosted by Scott Patterson. Is it real?
Yes, and Amy Sugarman co-hosted.
Oh, great.
Oh, barf.
2 points. 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah D. Bunting, The Neighborhood Rewatch, right in the name. The Neighborhood Rewatch is about the TV show.
I mean, I feel like it's too easy. Fine. The Neighborhood.
That's what I would have said.
Hosted by Marcia Cross and Brenda Strong.
Oh, speak of the devil herself. Nicely, because she's bigger than me. Desperate Housewives.
Is it real?
God, I hope not. No.
You are correct.
Oh.
You get to keep your 1 point. To Will, Zine Again. Zine Again. X-E-E-N. Zine Again. X-E-E-N.
The Alien Earth?
What?
Alien Earth.
Like, oh, I said Alien Birth. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Lucy Lawless and Renee O'Connor are your hosts of Zine.
Who is the first person? I'm sorry.
Lucy Lawless.
Lucy Lawless.
Xena Warrior Princess.
That is correct. You got 1 point on the board. Can you keep it by telling me if it's real or malarkey?
I want to know the answer to all of these is I hope not, by the way. I'm going to say not real.
You are correct. It is not our actual podcast.
Well done.
Tara.
Yeah.
Drama Queens.
I think that's One Tree Hill.
You are correct. Sophia Bush, Bethany Joy Lenz, Hillary Burton. Real or not?
Real.
You get to keep your 2 points. For Sarah, question 17.
It's pretty cool.
The Mess Around.
Ugh, I feel like that is real and I've heard of it, but I don't know the show. Hint.
Hannah Simone, Lamorne Morris.
I can't say anything about this until after you answer, but I do have something to say.
Lamorne Morris. Oh, shit. I don't know. New Girl?
That is correct. Is it real? The Mess Around. Can you subscribe to it wherever you get your podcast?
I don't know. Sure. Yes.
You are correct.
Thank God. I've heard that ad 1 billion times. Whatever network they're on, I'd listen to another podcast on it.
Well, you've got Back to the Bear, B-A-R-R-E, perhaps Bear Reed.
The Bar.
The Bar. All right, The Bar.
Ah.
Back to the Bar with two R's. Back to the Bar.
I know this is not the bar that's in the question. I'm going to say it anyway. Cheers.
Hosted by Christy Lukasiak and Kelly Highland.
That'll help.
Those are people, probably.
Those, can we guess whether the names of the humans are made up? I don't have the answer.
Anybody know this?
No.
Steel Meal is still on. Okay. That is Dance Moms, and that is real.
Oh okay.
Ew.
All right.
Okay.
This is question 19. It's for Tara.
Yep.
Girls Next Level.
Kim Possible.
Holly Madison and Bridget Marquardt.
The Girls Next Door.
Girls Next Door, Girls Next Level. Correct. Is it real?
It has to be real.
It has to be real, and you are correct for 1 point. Sarah D. Bunting, if you don't get this in 2 points, I'm afraid you're going to have to exit the show.
Why do you always jinx me like this? I hate you.
You'll get it. Your show is Miss Us? Wait. M-I $? Us? Question mark. Miss Us, where the S's are dollar signs, and there's two of them, and it's the end of a word.
Uh-huh.
For fuck's sake.
Arliss?
Yes, there we go. 2 points.
What, really?
Is Miss Us real with Robert Wool and Michael Boatman?
I mean, I think there's some question as to whether Robert Wool is alive, but I'm going to hope that it's real. So do you have somewhere to go?
Oh, no.
Fucking Arliss.
That's tragic.
I will note, I once had Robert Wool on my old Sports Illustrated show. Mm-hmm. I can assure you, he will talk about Arliss forever.
Oh, I'm sure.
So you know.
I do not
Just so you know.
All right, Will. Tocqueville. Tocqueville.
T-O-C?
Not about the O.C. You got Tom Welling and Michael Rosenbaum. What's the show about? Tom Welling.
I don't know.
Michael Rosenbaum doesn't know. Steel Mill's still out there in the wild. Anybody? No?
Smallville.
Smallville,
it
probably,
Smallville.
Right?
Smallville. That is correct. No points for anybody, though. Is Smallville's podcast Tocqueville real?
I don't think so.
It is real.
I was going to say, I don't think either of them has anything better to do.
Tara.
Yeah.
Unpacking the Toolbox.
Home Improvement.
That's what I would have guessed.
Funny enough, it's not Home Improvement, but the first host is Katie Lowe's.
Oh.
Heir to the Lowe's fortune.
Sure.
And Guillermo Diaz.
Scandal.
Scandal is correct. Is it real?
Yeah.
It is real. Good for 1 point. Back to Sarah. Again, 2 points or you're off the show.
Stop
the
this.
House of Halliwell.
Is this Benson? Just kidding. It's Charmed.
2 points. Is that real? Hosted by Holly Marie Combs, Brian Krause, and Drew Fuller.
Oh, Brian Krause.
Brian Krause. Friend of like, Peter Krause.
No relation, I think.
What is Peter Krause doing on
they
that
met
shit?
Each other at Krause Hut.
I think that's real.
You are correct. 2 points. Ooh. Nicely done. All right, taking us into our second score break for Will. Your celebrity rewatch podcast is called How Rude, Tannerinos.
You can do this.
Roseanne.
Hosted by Jody Sweetin and Andrea Barber.
Well, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Steel Mills? No? Yes? All right. That is Full House. Full
House. Oh, right. Wrong ABC.
All right. We are
Honor,
almost
not
done.
Tanner. Damn it.
So we're going to need the scores, please.
Yeah. Hope to be fact checked on this. I have Will with 7, Sarah with 8, me with 11.
Yes.
Sarah,
correct.
Do you concur? Okay. Thank you.
I concur. I fucked up last time. Sorry.
Who's in last place?
Will.
Will. All right. Will. Well, I'm going to give you a choice. You can play from the same box Sarah just played from, or we have 80s edition, we have 90s edition, we've got a really old teen trivia box from Canada in the 80s, and a friends edition.
Let's try the 90s edition. I can do the 90s edition.
Good choice.
Maybe.
The benefit of the 90s edition, each card is about 1 year, so I will find TV questions and also tell you the year that we're talking about. 1999.
Good luck.
What U.S. talk show host broke attendance records for guest speaker at Oxford University in 1999?
At Oxford University.
Yeah.
University. Conan O'Brien.
Any guesses? It's wild. Jerry Springer.
Whoa.
I would also have guessed Conan.
1995, Will. What Simpsons character popped a cap in Homer's boss, Montgomery Burns?
Oh, Maggie.
Maggie what?
Maggie Simpson.
Yeah, okay.
Sure.
1997. What neighboring community grows food for the Powerpuff Girls' hometown of Townsville? There's a place next to Townsville, grows food for Townsville. What is it called?
Foodville.
Oh, so close. Farmsville. All right. You got three questions left. You need to get two of them. 1993, Will. Whose first TV cooking show, How to Boil Water, was a colossal flop?
Oh, it's that young guy. Well, then young guy.
Somebody screenshot this, please. Oh, damn. Don't know?
No.
Anybody know? Emeril Lagasse.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You got to get these two, Will.
I don't have to do anything.
No, you have to.
No.
You must. 1990. What cartoon duo's theme promises they fight and bite, they fight and bite and fight? They fight.
Is it Ren and Stimpy?
And fight and bite and That's Itchy and Scratchy from The Simpsons. Itchy and Scratchy,
Jesus Christ.
All right, so that no points for you, but valiant effort. Let's get back into it. Everybody has three questions left. Tara.
Yeah.
Your rewatch podcast is called Extended Sentences.
Oz.
Good guess. Taylor Schilling, Laura Prepon. Excuse me. Do you have any Laura Prepon?
Yes.
And Kimiko Glenn.
Orange is the New Black.
Is it real?
No.
Or malarkey?
No. Malark.
It is malark.
I don't have time for the whole word.
Yeah, very Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm very busy.
Efficiency.
Malarks. Yep.
Sarah, podcastaways. One word, podcastaways. Intercat, if you must.
Lost.
2 points. Hosted by Jorge Garcia, Dominic Monaghan. Is it real or malark?
Real?
I would have said real too, for what it's worth.
I would have too.
Will, that was us.
This is us.
Sterling K. Brown, Mandy Moore, Chris Sullivan, real or not, that was us.
Malarks.
Real.
Oh, so real.
What? Yeah. Sterling
Courtney
K., what the hell?
Why is Sterling K. Brown doing that? Oh, my gosh.
All right. Back to Tara.
Yep.
Revamped.
Oh, my God. This could be anything. Vampire Diaries.
Juliet Landau is the sole host of Revamped.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Is it real?
No.
It's real.
Oh.
Juliet. This is an evil thing.
Unlike her accent.
Sarah D. Bunting, if you do not get 2 points
Stop
on
it.
This, you will be ejected from the show.
Stop doing
Can't
this.
Can't come soon enough.
Catching up with the Camdens.
Okay,
Seventh heaven.
Beverly Mitchell, David Gallagher, and Mackenzie Rosman. Is this real? Where's Stephen Collins?
That one's right on the line of none of them have anything better to do versus no one cares to hear what they think about
it. Yeah, for sure. That is why I think it is real.
2 points. Will, Boneheads. Ooh. Boneheads. Wasn't that the name of your podcast before you settled on
Christian Leach?
Yeah.
Boneheads.
Don't overthink it.
Bones.
Bones, correct. Hosted by Emily Deschanel and Carla Gallo or something like that. Is it real?
I'm saying malarks.
Real.
God bless it. These people need jobs.
I want to know the scores at this moment of time.
Okay, tell Will has 7, Sarah has 10, I have 13.
All right, let's get back into it. Tara Ariano.
Yep.
You've got 30-something? Question mark.
Oh, God. I mean it can't actually be 30-something. 30 Rock.
You are correct.
Okay.
Wow. Jane Krakowski, Scott Assett, and John Lutz, real or not?
Not.
You are correct. 2 points. Sarah D. Bunting.
If you do not get 2 points on this, you will be ejected from the theater.
The real Brady Bros.
Will be ejected from the theater?
Yes. We are. We recorded the theater.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, I forgot.
Right, what's the
beautiful
show?
Alpine Theater. Brady Bunch.
You are correct. Hosted by Barry Williams and Christopher Knight, is The Real Brady Bros a real podcast?
I think it is.
You are correct. 2 points. And let's finish off with Will. Just Jack and Will. Just Jack and Will.
Just Jack and Will.
Just Jack and Will.
Will and Grace.
You are correct. Hosted by Sean Hayes, Eric McCormick. Real or Malark?
Malark.
God damn it. Really? There's a...
There needs to be... Can we hire, like, a bounty hunter?
You just turned into Roscoe P. Coltrane there for a second.
No, that was... Yeah.
God darn it! Eat us! Get over here!
I'm Duke, boys.
I watched Ephes, so now my new exclamation is going to be Mother McCree, because of the one guy that says what I'm talking.
That is regulation. Scores, please.
All right, Will finished with 7. Sarah had 12. I had 15.
All right, nicely done. Well battled, everybody. Mm-hmm. Let's just play the tiebreaker here for shits and giggles and a future steel meal.
Okay.
First person to shout out the answer wins. I think it won't take long.
Great.
The podcast, which is real, is called Still Ugly.
Mm-hmm. Ugly Betty.
Ugly Betty?
Sarah D. Bunting got Ugly Betty out first. That is correct.
Good job. Yes.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Seth, and congratulations, Tara.
Tara.
Good job, Tara.
Me.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Before going around the dial with stops at The Five-Star Weekend, Breaking Bad, and High Potential. Sarah's sports night canon dreams fell like so much eggnog out of our mouths. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Tara was a winner of this week's game time from Seth.
Leaving it to the professionals.
Tara's watching Sarah be very sort of happy, angry. It's a very weird mood here at the end of this episode. Next up is Star Trek Strange New Worlds on Extra, Extra Hot Great. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
this is our little coven of women and men sometimes.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I, too, am going to start drinking now.
And Mr. Will Leach.
Unlike all those other podcasts, this one should exist and does.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra. Hot Great.
Quiet, please. Shh. Shut your mouths, please.